Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationships Matter with Dr. Annie Abram. We will help you to understand your interactions with others so that you can create meaningful communications with the closest people in your life, as well as someone you meet fleetingly, such as a stranger on a bus. Join Dr. Annie Abram and expert guests for a deeper understanding of your relationships, how to make them better, and most importantly, how to make them matter. Please be advised that this show is not a substitute for psychotherapy. Tune in every Monday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Here is your host, Dr. Annie Abram.
Hello, all you listeners, and thank you so much for joining me today. Today, our guest is Dr. Jeff Temple, who is an associate professor and psychologist, as well as the director of behavioral health and research in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston. He earned a research grant from the Hogg Foundation for mental health. Included in Dr. Temple's areas of expertise are the subjects intimate partner violence, teen dating violence, and substance abuse. So thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Temple.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Abram. I am looking forward to a very interesting
conversation. So, first of all, I would like to ask you, how do you understand teen sexting? What is it all about?
Well, it's a great question, Dr. Abram. And I kind of came on this question a little bit by accident. I'm doing a research study looking at the risk and protective factors of teen dating violence with the idea of understanding what predicts healthy relationships and what predicts unhealthy relationships. It's a six-year study that we just finished the 6 year, started back in 2010. So we have data on over 1,000 participants that they started when they were 14 and now they're about 20, 21. And in the second year of the survey, I was actually watching the news and something came on about sexting. And the anchor was talking about sexting as if it was kind of going to, you know, end the world, and there was some dire predictions. And so I really quickly did some research and noticed that there wasn't anything on it. And so I added some sexting questions to our survey, and we were one of the first people to publish an empirical investigation of sexting. And you know, I think it's important, and to get to your question specifically, is, you know, what does it mean? How does it fit into relationships today? And I think it's really similar to how relationships have looked for eons, whether it was in the 80s and 90s with Polaroid pictures or even before that. It's just, I think that, you know, when teens become interested in sex, when they become a little more autonomous, when they get a little more adventurous, I think that there is this, you know, this need for and wanting of to investigate or to explore their sexuality. And I think sexting is just a modern way of doing that.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there's so many more consequences that are possible consequences of sexting. So, for example, you know, someone can have a very difficult breakup and it can be broadcast to 5,000 people in 5 seconds, right? And then that person can be marginalized or bullied or whatever. So to me, it seems as if there are a series of events which can happen very quickly and be very, very hurtful to others in a way
absolutely
that didn't exist 30 years ago.
You're absolutely right. With the Polaroid picture, the very worst case is, well, most likely when you're shaking it, you're going to realize maybe I shouldn't do this. But so you had some time to think about it, unlike today where you press send and it immediately sends to the person. I think also that even if you do, in the Polaroid days, were to find yourself losing that picture, the most damage they could do is a handful of people see it. And now you're right, it could be distributed to thousands of people, and if on the internet, millions of people. And so I think that there is that added risk of that's associated with today's sexting and, you know, the whole idea of the smartphone. So you're absolutely right. I think one thing that we need to do is a better job of talking with kids about the potential consequences of sexting. I think right now we do a pretty poor job as parents and educators, in the sense that we mostly tell our kids, don't do this. Why would you do this? If you do this, your life is going to be ruined. You're not going to be able to find a job. You're not going to be able to get into school. And that's just not very true in most cases. And teens know that. So they know that most of their friends have sexted, that they themselves may have sexted, and that nothing bad happened. So rather than, you know, doing these kind of fatalistic, you know, don't do this or else, I think we should do something more like what we do with cars and seatbelts. And, you know, that everyone wears a seatbelt. Well, everyone wears it despite the fact that there's probably little chance of anything bad happening to them if they don't. But they wear it because of what if. And I think we have to do when we talk to kids, when we talk about sexting, is that what if.
I think it's very difficult for kids at that age to foresee long-term consequences. I think it's much easier, for example, to understand the long-term consequences of wearing a seatbelt. I mean, one is very impulsive behavior frequently, and the other is behavior that is learned from, you know, day zero.
Yeah, I would push back a little bit on that, is because when we talk to kids about sexting, about the potential consequences, they actually do understand what the potential consequences are, and do it anyway. Just like we sometimes understand as adults, understand potential consequences of stuff and do it anyway. That being said, you're absolutely right that their frontal lobe isn't quite as developed, and that they are more likely to be impulsive and to you know, do something impulsively. But I think that we probably don't give enough credit to teens in that they do understand the consequences and sometimes do it anyway.
Well, what do you think about it from a neuro point of view? I mean, we all know that teens are developing their brains during adolescence, and that process doesn't really stop until about 26. And their cognitive capacity is very compromised until then. How would you address that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that falls into it nicely. And the same reason that we often see with teens making bad decisions, poor decisions about drinking, about doing drugs, about driving unsafe, I think is the same thing that underlies impulsive decisions to sext. But, you know, that all being said, we know that as teens get older and into college aged and beyond, that they're oftentimes still sexting. It's often in more stable relationships as we get older, and I think that there's less of that what if aspect to worry about. But yeah, I mean, I think it certainly falls into this, that their brain's still developing. It's coming at a really difficult time too. So not only as you know, teenagers, is their brain developing, going through enormous changes, we're also seeing a whole bunch of biological changes. We're seeing a whole bunch of psychosocial changes in terms of getting more, their peers are becoming more important, their parents are a little bit less important, their parental supervision and monitoring is reduced, they are more autonomous, they oftentimes now have cars and so that they can drive places, they have friends that have access to drugs and alcohol, so a lot of these things are happening at the same time, so there's a lot of pressures that I think are difficult to understand. And I think with social media and with smartphones, it really makes it that much more difficult to be a teenager today than it was 20 years ago. And the example that I often give is when I was a kid, when I was in high school, I would, you know, play baseball, have practice, go to school, have practice, come home, and then I would put on jammies and watch 21 Jump Street with my mom and be a dork. Now I think it's harder to do that. I think that teens have to be on all the time. So because of social media 24/7, they have to post things the right way at the right time, and they have to be, you know, they have to at least put on this skin of coolness kind of 24 hours a day. So it's really hard to be a teen right now, I think.
I mean, yes, I agree with you completely. And their online profile, you know, needs to match the reality of how they behave, whether or not that's the reality of their character. So it's very confusing, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And this, sorry to interrupt. I was going to say one of the things that we're finding that's pretty interesting is that their online lives seems to be a real good mirror of their offline lives. So much so that the line distinguishing the two is becoming increasingly blurred. And I think we do disservice as adults and parents when we try to kind of ignore their online lives. So that's just something they do online, because it really is a reflection of what they do offline, and it's becoming a part of their person.
Mm-hmm. And it's certainly become a part of how they think of themselves, I think, and therefore how other people think of them.
Absolutely agree. Yes, I think you're right. And you know, I think how someone is treated online is how someone is treated offline, and how we perceive ourselves and how we reflect ourselves online is the same way we do offline. I think they're indistinguishable.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I was interested in one of your findings, and that is that you feel that sexting could be the new norm. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, yeah, so that I probably could have used better language than that. I think what I'm saying is that it is a fairly common behavior. I'm not saying we should condone it or promote it, just like we should not condone or promote teen sex. But I do think it's starting to become part of the normal repertoire of adolescent behavior and adolescent flirtation. So,
and you directly, you know, relate that to social media, technology, et cetera.
Yes, to a certain extent. Now, I think if we had smartphones in the 80s, we'd be seeing the exact same prevalence. We'd be seeing the exact same behavior. So I don't think it's anything. This doesn't say anything about kids these days. I think it's just the advent of the smartphones that makes it able to explore sexuality as we've done for centuries.
Mhm. I have an email here from, let's see, she is a sexuality high school teacher of health. And she says, all teen sexting falls under the category of risky sexual behavior. The exchange of nude photos from adolescents 14 to 16 is number one illegal under the laws of child pornography. And what can be the positive effects of naked picture sharing among adolescents be? What can be the positive outcomes of that, I guess, is what she's saying.
Sure. I'll take that first point first, in the sense that sharing naked photos being a risky sexual behavior. It's certainly a sexual behavior, and like we are talking about, it's online lives relating to offline lives. We know through my own research and others that sexting is definitely related to sex. Whether or not it's related to risky sex is not has not been determined. There's been studies that some say it is related to risky sex. Some do not find that. And I think the more common a behavior is, the less likely it is to be related to something risky.
Mm-hmm.
On to the second point about it being illegal. It absolutely is illegal But the child pornography part of it is not necessarily the case anymore. A lot of states have smartened up and realized that they can't equate this to child pornography when a 16-year-old sends a naked picture to another 16-year-old. Many states have. So they've gone away from the punitive and more to education, to where maybe now it's a misdemeanor instead of a felony. There are still some states that are lagging behind. North Carolina, for instance, has a famous case right now where I think it was a 16 and 16-year-old shared naked pictures of each other and are now being prosecuted as child pornographers and being tried as adults. It's absolutely ridiculous. I agree with you completely. So on to the third point, what are the positive aspects of it? I don't think that there are necessarily positive aspects of one teen sexting another teen. I have a 12-year-old daughter. I hope that she never sends a naked picture of herself to another teen. But I kind of also hope she never has sex. But, I assume she eventually will. And I hope it to be in a healthy relationship. And I think that's the important part that I definitely want to talk about. But, I think if it's part of a healthy relationship, if it's monogamous and the picture never gets out or anything. And again, I'm not condoning. I don't want my child doing this. I don't know if there are any positive aspects of it, but it's not necessarily associated with risky sexual behavior. It could be part of our new way of flirting or our new way of exploring our sexuality. A lot riskier now because of the possibility of it getting distributed to a wider audience. I will also say that when it's done under coercive or pressured situations, that's when, that we certainly need to be concerned about that. Just like we see with sexual behavior, whether it's with teens or with young adults or adults, is if it's coercive or pressured, you're going to see some of the negative consequences. And the same thing goes with sexting. If it's pressured or coerced, you're going to see negative consequences.
Right, as in domestic violence.
Certainly, yeah, absolutely. So I think it would fit in that. And, we see that case with cyber abuse with teens that fits under dating violence is, send me a picture of yourself naked or I will tell everyone that you're a slut. Or, if you don't have sex with me, I will forward the picture that you sent me. That sort of thing. So so it certainly can be used abusively.
When we say healthy relationships, exactly what do we mean by that?
That is a great, great question, and one I think that we need to explore quite a bit. We talk to our kids, to our teens about everything, about, math and English and history, and we teach them how to be people. But one thing that we don't do a good job of is teaching about healthy relationships and what healthy relationships look like. And I think we should be doing a good job. Just as schools teach math and English, I think we should be teaching relationships. And when I talk about a healthy relationship, I think what we're saying is that they can resolve conflicts, because all relationships are going to have conflicts and arguments. That's a part of every relationship. So what distinguishes healthy from unhealthy is resolving those conflicts in a way that where there's not violence, where there's respect to each member of the couple, where there's trust, where there's, an example would be when someone wants to go, say a 16-year-old girl wants to hang out with her friends instead of with her boyfriend, that the boyfriend respects that decision and realizes that it's okay that she goes and hangs out with her friends and it's healthy and I don't feel jealous and that sort of thing.
But why do you think it is that we haven't been talking about what are meaningful relationships? What is that? Is it because the parents themselves are inhibited or don't know how to talk about it or don't see it as their responsibility?
I think it's a lot of things. So I think one is that it's relatively new that even like things like domestic violence and dating violence, up until, you know, very recently in the last couple of decades, people considered that to be a private matter and not to be talked about in public. And the same thing with relationships. And now that I think that, that it's becoming a little more open, now we're talking about it. And with parents, you know, I think parents probably try to, and parents probably try to be good role models, but even some of the best intentioned ones are not. For instance, say a mom and dad get in an argument in front of their kids, and then later on they make up, but they make up away from their kids, so their kids don't get to see how to make up. So even well-intentioned parents, I think, sometimes aren't the best role models. So we should be making up in front of our kids. You know, I make a point, probably annoyingly, to my wife and kids, that when there's an argument, I make sure that we make up in front of our kids and that we practice positive conflict resolution and, you know, and respect each other. And, you know, so I think even that. So I think, it, you know, it used to be a private matter. It's starting to become more public. I certainly think social media and Facebook has put it out there even a little bit more.
Well, it seems to me that it would be great if we could have sexy, not sexy, but healthy relationship
That'd be a different program
in
Dr.
schools.
I would agree, yeah. So I'm actually on the school board here in Galveston, where I live, and that's something that we have strongly suggested. And more importantly, I'm also implementing a program called 4th R. So the 4th R stands for relationships, so reading, writing, arithmetic, 4th R being relationships. This is a great program that was developed in Canada by guided by the name of Dr. David Wolf and some others up there. And it really tries to teach relationships like we teach subjects. So it's guided practice, it's role plays, it's building on each other, and it's implemented in health class to actually replace health curriculum, so it's not an add-on program. It actually becomes part of what every kid would get.
And when would this be introduced?
So it's already been, in Canada, it's actually used at quite a bit of schools, thousands of them. It is being used in the States as well, in Alaska, New York, a couple other places, and in Texas now. We're beginning to use it, and we're implementing it as soon as this spring. And we're going to start out slow in about 10, 15 high schools, and then we'll build from there.
Well, I would suggest that it could start much, much earlier than that, as in, you know, nursery school, kindergarten, that children could be helped to understand, you know, how important it is to treat your peer well and with
respect.
Dr.
Abram, you are speaking my language. I agree with you completely. In fact, we have a hopefully someone's listening that matters, because we have a grant right now that's under review at the National Institute of Health to evaluate a middle school version of 4th R, and then even earlier, while I haven't looked at that myself, there are some fantastic programs that looks at socio-emotional learning as early as preschool and above, and really focuses on healthy relationships, and it really is key. I mean, if we can improve relationships, we can improve school performance, we can decrease domestic violence, and if you do those two things, even if you don't care about relationships and don't have a heart and don't care about any of this, just from an economic perspective, we're talking billions and billions of dollars a year in terms of, if you reduce domestic violence, that's, you know, reducing healthcare cost, increases productivity, school performance. Of course, that's going to improve our economy. So, and relationships is at the base of all of this.
Well, I think that relationships trump all. And if you can somehow, you know, help at a very early age to help children understand how important it is to be able to communicate their feelings, we're way, way, way ahead of the game.
Yes, I agree with you completely. I think, Dr. Abram, that we are solving the world's problems right now.
Yeah, right. In 30 short minutes, right?
That's right. That's right.
Right. So, what is your most research?
So, in addition to the 4R programming, one of the things that I mentioned this earlier is this longitudinal study where we're looking at about 1,000 participants from when they were 14 to about 20 years old, and really looking at how relationships develop. And we found some pretty interesting stuff. We found that substance use often precedes dating violence, which
mm-hmm.
is important, I think, from a prevention standpoint, that if we can do a better job of preventing substance use, maybe we can prevent dating violence. We also have another study that looks at the relationship between cyber abuse. So this
mm-hmm.
is being abusing your partner through Facebook or through texting or any other social media platform, and we saw that is probably not surprisingly highly related to dating violence in real life, and
mm-hmm.
Which I think goes to what we were talking about earlier, in that the relationship between online and offline lives are indistinguishable.
Mm-hmm.
What else have we done? There's been another study that we looked at witnessing parents, violence between parents, and that relating to perpetration of dating violence with teens. And one of the things that was interesting about that is that we saw that witnessing mother-to-father violence seemed to be a more important predictor than father-to-mother violence in terms of predicting adolescents' own use of violence.
And we
guessed at a few things. We think maybe it's because the mom is often the role model or the person who the adolescent boy or girl spends the most time with. And so maybe if she uses violence, it's more likely to be replicated. It could also be
mm-hmm.
more that if the mom's using violence, maybe that's just a sign that more overall violence in the home, which would then be related to adolescent use of violence.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. How did you do that study? I would be interested.
So this is a questionnaire study. So with the over 1,000 kids that started when they were freshmen in high school at several high schools in Southeast Texas. And for that, we went into health classes. We got parent permission and child consent and did all that stuff. And it was a fairly lengthy survey. And we repeated that survey every year for the next 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we asked about things like your own use of violence, your mom's use of violence, your dad's use of violence, substance use, sexting,
mm-hmm.
Mental and physical health, social media use, pretty much everything that can be related to adolescent health, we asked.
You know, our time is almost up, but I remember reading something about the findings of your study, and it said there seemed to be no relationship between sexting and mental health. And I was fascinated by that.
I think that's important, and I'm glad you asked that. I think that if we started to break down sexting, we would find a relationship. So if you were coerced into sexting, or if you felt coerced into sexting, I think that we would see a relationship to mental health. Or if you're the picture, if you knew that your picture was forwarded on to a bunch of different people, we would probably see a relationship to mental health. But I think in and of itself, the act of sexting, you know, I don't think that it means that someone's depressed if they're sexting or have low self-esteem or is anxious. I think it is a fairly common behavior. So I think common's the better word, not normal. A fairly common
mm-hmm.
behavior that is happening across a number of teens, regardless of their mental health makeup.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that at the moment it's part of the culture.
I think becoming part of the culture, maybe, yes. And I would say that it has always been part of the culture. It's just the advent of the smartphones that made it immediate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe a little more concerning.
Mm-hmm. Thank you
so much. I guess what I'm saying, thank you, Dr. Abram, for having
thank
me.
You
I really
so much.
Appreciate it.
I really appreciate your coming on the show today, and you are a wealth of information, and I think hope to parents, adults, and kids. So thank you so much.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You are listening to Relationships Matter with Dr. Annie Abram, a show about social justice, mindful relationships, and parenting. We air every Monday at 12:30 Eastern Time. Call us at 646-716-5232 during showtime or email Dr. D-R-N, no E, Abram, A-B-R-A-M, at gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter at AskDrAnnie. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to being with you next week.